Thoughts. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and I'm here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. I've been reporting on food, health, and the environment for the last two decades, focusing on all the things that affect our personal health that come to us from the context in which we live. And that means the health of our water, air, and earth, the condition of our communities and our society and our social fabric, the ecology of planet Earth. All of these things impact our personal health. And one of the things that I've done for over two decades is report on all the things that we need to do to protect our health and take care of our health. And in the first wave of what I call the health revolution, there was quite a lot of terrific information, and it's still growing, about all the things that we can do that really help support and build our health. But over the last decade or more, there's been a lot about the things that are coming toward us from social and policies, industrial choices, government decisions, regulations and the lack thereof, science and the lack thereof. And every week on Connect the Dots, we talk about these larger forces that impact our health with a variety of authors, experts, advocates, filmmakers, activists, and political figures as well. We've had a whole great bunch of guests on this show, and we're adding to that today, discussing one of my very favorite topics, which I've reported on the Huffington Post and Alternet for 6 years or more, and that is toxic chemicals. After many years of effort to try, and we've had a number of thought leaders on this show trying to better regulate the chemicals in our environment, now a filmmaker has stepped up and done a film that will really bring this issue to an even wider audience, which I am so thrilled about. The film is called Unacceptable Levels, and the filmmaker is Ed Brown, and he is my guest on today's show, and we'll be talking all about toxic chemicals, what they do when they're in our bodies and how they got there and what we can do about it. Welcome to Connect the Dots, Ed Brown.
Thank you so much, Allison. It's my pleasure.
And I just want to congratulate you, because I hear that you and the film just won a wonderful and prestigious award in the last day or so. Can you just, what is that honor exactly?
Well, we had, the film thankfully has gotten a few awards up to this point, and we won, it was actually a couple of weeks ago, a prestigious award in France, in Paris, at the biggest environmental film festival in the world. And whenever you take home a prize like that, you really feel vindicated for something you've accomplished. And hopefully this is something that really transcends just, you know, and again, it feels great to receive an award, and I would never disparage that anyway. I'm just saying, like, this really shows that that people care about this subject. It is a growing concern for everybody, and this really drives the point home that that something as serious as chemical exposure can really gain a lot of traction in mainstream media, and especially it turns a lot of heads whenever you watch it. And again, if it made all of us feel great that we could accomplish something like that. But we had our Hollywood opening last week in Los Angeles, and it was very exciting at the ArcLight Theater. A lot of great movie stars came out, and heads of great companies like Christopher Gavigan with The Honest Company and Gary Hirschberg with Stonyfield. And we couldn't be more pleased with the outcome up to this point.
That's fantastic. When did you begin making the film? Like, how long has it been from, you know, the kind of, oh, wow, I need to find out more about this and kind of film this, to today? How long a journey has it been for you?
It's been about 4 years, but I would also say that it went back just a few more years on top of that, because I had gotten an idea whenever I was working at a restaurant waiting tables, and I took a drink of a glass of water, and it really tasted like a lot of chemicals. And I thought to myself, you know, this glass of chemicals is really what I'm drinking. It's not really just water. They tell me I'm supposed to drink 8 glasses of this a day. Maybe one is okay, but really 8 of them, are they really taking that into consideration whenever they say that, you know, this is okay? So anyway, fast forward a few more years. My wife had a second miscarriage, and, you know, whenever she had a second miscarriage, I sat back and I thought to myself that that this was something that we really needed to take a closer look at.
Mm-hmm.
So we looked at all the personal care products that she was putting into her body and the food that she was eating, the water, it goes back to the water she was drinking, and it also goes back to everything that goes into our bodies on an every moment basis, really, what we're sleeping on, what we're cooking with. And so I got a camera. I went out and I bought a camera and I started filming. I started talking to some people. And that's how this really came to fruition. I started a journey just as one father. This is really a film about my journey and quest as a father, and I became a filmmaker in the meantime.
Wow, that's fantastic. Thanks. A real grassroots filmmaking project.
I would call it that, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's no getting around that.
And you have some terrific people in the film. Some have been guests on this show. You've had Andy Egregious, director of Safer Chemicals, Joan Blades of Moms Rising, Richard Clapp, wonderful early researcher and professor into this topic. You have Ken Cook of the Environmental Working Group. I mean, it's quite a Stacey Malkin, Campaign for Safe Cosmetics. You even have the one who got it all started, Ralph Nader, in the film. Congratulations. That's really incredible. So, what is it? I mean, when you began the process, you sort of had some suspicions. You sort of tasted stuff in the water. You really wondered. And I think that's just such a brilliant example. It's kind of like we're given these health prescriptions, drink water 8 glasses a day, eat healthy food, do this. But there's kind of not really an assessment about whether we can access healthy water, whether the food that we're eating is healthy and chemical-free. I know that one of the integrative physicians whom I know, because having followed the integrative health movement for many, many years, this is one of my original callings to this area. I've been very involved with fracking, which is, these are not personal care chemicals. These are hazardous waste chemicals.
Right.
That could get into water. And, some of the very doctors who would say, drink 8 glasses of water, they're not saying, their solution is buy a water filter, which can't really filter, many things. But they're not really looking at whether their recommendations are doable or if not, what we need to do about it. Where were you in terms of a point of awareness versus ignorance when you began looking into this whole process?
I think I was very ignorant of it 4 mm-hmm. years ago. I mm-hmm. had been eating organic food almost completely for about 6 to 8 years mm-hmm. prior to that. But mm-hmm. I just thought food was the only aspect of it that really was affecting my body adversely. Mm-hmm. And then I started to understand after my wife picked up a little tube of acne medication and she looked at it and she said, I Googled 5 of these ingredients and they're all carcinogens. And I thought to myself, how on earth was it even possible that I could buy something like that or that she could put something like that onto her skin? I found that to be astounding.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like we live in a third world country that couldn't possibly know anything about this subject.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really at the point whenever I thought back to that glass of water, I thought back to everything else that I was doing. And then I started to get an understanding that we're in a constant barrage of low-dose exposures, most of the time at low-dose exposures, on an everyday basis, all of us, as we're
mm-hmm.
all being dosed with these chemicals. Many of them, our body has absolutely no idea what to do with. Some of them we can eliminate fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
But, on a daily basis, as this accumulates into our tissues and into
mm-hmm.
our organs and into our bloodstream, that's whenever this became a really serious issue. And then it really went even further for me because I was thinking more about my children.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever I learned that we have that our children have over 200 synthetic industrial chemicals inside of their bodies day one, to me, that sounded an alarm that we absolutely have to do something about this starting today. And this is all of us. It doesn't matter what your class is. It doesn't matter what your race is, what your age is. None of those factors play into this problem here, as mm-hmm. it's all of our problems. And that's why I call it in the film, you know, an unnatural disaster, because that's exactly what this is.
Mm-hmm. that's a really, so, you know, for readers who are new to this, I mean, basically, you know, I've heard both figures, 80,000 unstudied, unregulated chemicals, 84,000. The New York Times used that figure in the last 2 weeks. The bottom line is that the original act that was supposed to, which was introduced back in the 70s, to look at, explore, regulate these chemicals, basically was rendered non-functional. And, you know, this is something, and it hasn't really been effective. And in all the time that, you know, 20-odd, what is it, seven, since 74 or 5, you know, this is like a quarter of a century or more, going on to half a century practically, there's a law and a book, but there's no ability for the Environmental Protection Agency to actually study and regulate these chemicals. So there's like a big unknown out there, and yet many people assume that if they weren't all okay, they wouldn't be there, and that someone's kind of minding the store. This is something we've also noticed with fracking, which is, you know, oh, there are some people who say it can be regulated to be made safe. But it's kind of like, are the right laws on the books? Is the right science being done? You know, does someone have the intention and the clout to enforce regulations and the staffing to, you know, to kind of look into the thing and make it happen? Or is it just, you know, kind of empty words on the page? What's your view on that? Where are we now? Where are we today with that?
Well, that's a good point. What you're referring to is the 1976 Toxic Substances Control Act. Now, this mm-hmm. was an act that was brought into legislation mm-hmm. by Congress, and they felt like this law was going to be effective in regulating chemicals that were being created. A lot of them were grandfathered in. Mm-hmm. Whether they were toxic or not, it didn't really matter. Nobody really had a lot of data on it. So that, moving forward, they brought in this new law, and it was a great piece of legislation that if they were able to really use and utilize fully, mm-hmm. it would be an effective barrier between many toxic chemicals and ourselves. But unfortunately, in the way the real world works sometimes, that's just not the way that it is. So whenever it comes to federal oversight and regulations with our federal agencies, mm-hmm. I think that they're just not given enough of a chance or opportunity, and they don't have the feet on the ground to really make this stuff work mm-hmm. on an every second basis for all of us. So mm-hmm. they have to do tongue-in-cheek legislation, and they really are at the mercy of a lot of the trade associations whenever it comes to something like this. Now, I'm not one to sit back and suggest that all companies are just, you know, out to destroy the planet or anything like that. I think they're operating in a mode where they've been doing things, they've been doing business a particular way, and they enjoy doing business that way, and the regulation might make it extremely difficult for them. That's why they resisted it. I don't think that they do it out of spite or some kind of evil tendency. I simply believe they're worried about the next quarter. They're worried mm-hmm. about the next half and the next annual report. So whenever we look at it that way, you know, I think the federal oversight could be certainly tightened up greatly, but we as a people, all of us, completely have to educate ourselves more vehemently every single day about this low-dose exposure issue, because it is all of our problem, whether the federal government is going to do it for us or whether anybody else, or the companies, are going to do it for us or not. That's going to be a really, really tightrope walk down. So me, as a father and as a consumer, I sit back and I say, I have to do something starting today, whether the federal government does something about it or not.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like, as you tour and talk to people, I mean, how well-informed are people? Would you say most people have a clue, or do they really kind of, it's a big shock to them? Or, you know, what do you encounter in that regard?
Well, that's a twofold issue. Most people who are completely in the dark about this and who don't understand anything about it, they dismiss it and look at me as just some tree-hugging hippie. Mm-hmm. And that couldn't be further from the truth. But mm-hmm. I try to explain to them just one thing that they might be doing that they could change, and I get ignored often. And then mm-hmm. you have another group of people that do understand something like this is happening, like parents,
mm-hmm.
mothers especially. They sit mm-hmm. back and they really want to take care of their child more than anything else. It's a responsibility that they bear that that translates really well into understanding this issue. So what they know is a few things. They learn about BPA. They learn about pesticides. They learn about other, you know, chemicals like flame retardants. They really want to do a really good job of trying to get those items out of their homes and out of their bodies especially.
Mm-hmm.
And they know a little bit about it, which is great. Some of them know a lot about it, which is really wonderful. But
mm-hmm.
for the most part, whenever it comes to audiences that I'm encountering, you know, what my job is to sit back and say, okay, well, we know, even if you know a little bit about it, let's know a lot more
mm-hmm.
and then grow an appreciation for this problem. And then really work toward doing something about it, which is an aspect of awareness that really isn't brought home too often, whether it's a campaign slogan or anything else like that. Really what I try to get them to do is pick one thing, as you become aware of it, pick one thing in your life that you might want to change, that you think might really affect you personally, and
mm-hmm.
then take some steps, get, you know, be active in making a difference for your own body, because there isn't a greater investment in any of our lives than your own body, because once that goes, you don't really have anything else.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that I think is kind of a loophole in the whole situation is that, you know, it's kind of a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and, you know, what does a little bit of this and that actually add up to? And I think there's kind of a sense that, oh, it's sort of floats away somewhere, or it leaves our body. It's like there isn't a sense that it's actually adding up to anything.
I completely agree. I mm-hmm. think most people sit back and say, "Well, I'm not feeling, you know, after I eat this sandwich from a fast food restaurant, I don't feel the chemicals hurting me, and I don't feel the pesticides that might be on it." So if I'm not feeling it and there's not an instantaneous reaction, some people do have reactions, like allergic reactions, very mm-hmm. serious at times. Some
mm-hmm.
people do have that. Some people have audible chemical sensitivity because they've been dosed, and now they feel almost everything. But for the most part, in the large majority of people don't feel something like this is happening. So they tend to not believe it, and they tend to not, you know, accept it, and they ignore it. So that's
mm-hmm.
absolutely the case with a lot of people. Sure, they feel like they're, you know, preventing a disease is hard to feel great about because you feel like you haven't done anything.
Mm-hmm.
But ask anybody that's been through chemotherapy that has beaten cancer and ask them how they feel about how the arduous journey that they've been on. And
mm-hmm.
or ask a parent that has a child that has autism or like myself, I have asthma. I mean, and I was born with it. I mean, these are the types of things that you wish never happened in the first place. And if it could be prevented, you wouldn't really feel like there's a finish line.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's another aspect of it, where if I beat the disease or I beat the problem before it even happens, then I feel like I haven't accomplished anything. And a lot of people feel, you know, a lot of people feel like that, you know.
Because that's a really incredible point. That's a really, really great point. You know, in terms of as someone where, you know, there were challenges in, you know, having a baby and now you're a father and everything, what do you see among the kids, and what do you know about the statistics among, you know, the kids of your family's generation, you know, your kids' generation? I mean, what's going on with them? Are we seeing the effects there?
Absolutely. I mean, I sit back just in my own experience as a father. You notice things about your kids very quickly, and then whenever you read statistics like one in every 330 children will have cancer, or
mm-hmm.
the mind-boggling statistic that one in every 55 children will have autism at this point,
mm-hmm.
there is very serious ramifications. Something obviously is happening, and genes. We know that our genes don't change that fast. So there must be something that's environmental that's happening to us. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, so whenever my own kids, you know, they're a petri dish. You notice things about them all the time. If my kids were to eat candy, which is organic, they still, you know, they're bouncing off the ceiling because of the sugar. So you see that there's an instantaneous reaction just by that as an example. But my son, who had behavioral issues, He was in mood swings, and he always had a lot of difficulty focusing, and it almost like an ADHD kind of scenario. But we took gluten out of his diet, and within 2 months, he is, you know, we're really excited because it's like he's here, and now he can communicate, and he doesn't have the behavioral problems. So I'm just saying, like, one thing in particular. Mm-hmm. One change, I can assure everybody that there's something going on in these rapidly growing little bodies that we're looking at every day. So there's absolutely, there could be just one thing. It could be a number of different things. But we want to make sure, and I know every parent feels like this, whether you're working for DuPont or Monsanto or whether you're just a hick from central Pennsylvania like myself, we all sit back and we want the best for our children, and I do believe that, and so that's why I sit back and I think, you know, small changes are really noticeable, no matter what age as well. So yeah, mm-hmm. I can see that on an everyday basis, the little things that we can do to them that cause little changes in them, and mm-hmm. so that's why, you know, this low dose exposure thing, I really want to avoid at all costs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to avoid. In other words, you know, you can say, no, thank you. I won't take that receipt, you know. You know, and you're avoiding BPA or you're trying to avoid the can. But there are a lot of things that simply one can't avoid through personal choice and all. What are some of your favorite organizations for people to take action with?
Well, I think that there are so many great ones out there. That's going to be difficult for me to pinpoint them. I'll just give you some highlights. Like, the Environmental Working Group has an amazing database. This is called Skin Deep, where women can go on there, or men, of course. Anybody can go on there and learn a lot about what's in their personal care products. They can learn about sunscreens. And I think it's a very effective tool to use as, you know, as a measuring stick for everybody moving forward. Safer Chemicals Healthy Families is an organization out of Washington, D.C. They work really hard on trying to get everybody to understand legislation, what's really happening down there. Andy Agreus has already been on your show. And Lindsay Dahl there, I mean, they work really, really hard on trying to bring awareness home. And Jennifer Beals is a spokesperson for them, along with Jessica Alba. And they really want to, and it's not just awareness for them. I mean, the legislation and everything that's happening in the Beltway, along with, you know, what's happened with toxic chemicals over the course of 30-plus years, they really try to bring that point home. The Center for Environmental Health out in San Francisco, this is a group that really, I mean, they're a group of lawyers, and they work on suing companies that are putting hazardous chemicals into everyday products, and they're another one that I really love deeply. Mm-hmm. And Healthy Child, Healthy World, with Gigi Chang and Nancy Chuda. I mean, this is an organization that really, you know, you see a lot of kids being the focus at that organization, and they always do a tremendous job of awareness and trying to get parents to truly understand, you know, the magnitude of this problem.
Yeah, that's terrific. And all of these groups, these are places where people can, you know, they can see your film, they can get inspired, and then they can go to these organizations. They all have websites. They can keep on top of when, you know, we need to write and petition and call Congress, the people and senators to, you know, pass favorable legislation. When new studies come out, you know, this is where you find the information at the Environmental Working Group. I actually just did two blogs, one on sunscreen screens and one on chemicals and beauty products based on their Skin Deep database for a website called Take Part. You know, this is where you can actually look at the products you're using. I was surprised myself because I've been, you know, kind of health buff forever, eating organic forever, you know, doing everything you're supposed to do forever. I'm, you know, usually ahead of the curve on the research and the practice. So, you know, I'm kind of leading that usually, you know, or just after the people who are leading it, kind of getting the information and then purveying it. And yet I have to say I was surprised at, you know, some of my favorite products, healthy brands, what some of the actual ingredients were when you looked at it. So, you know, this is all the kind of stuff that, you know, that people can do to both stay on top of it and also have an influence in, you know, how well these things are studied and regulated. I mean, let's talk about the science a little bit, and then we're going to have a break and we'll come back and talk more in the second half of the show.
Sure.
But one of the problems has been that, you know, these things really haven't been really studied that well. I mean, it's only really in the last decade or more that we begin to have some scientific analysis of the impact of this. I know you spoke to Richard Clapp. I mean, and Elizabeth Grossman in the film. What were the scientists saying? I mean, you know, what is their perspective on what's going on with this?
I think Joe Guth from SEHN, which is SEHN,
mm-hmm.
Science and Environmental Health Network.
Yeah.
I think he really encapsulated this problem very well when we're looking at the flood of chemicals that are coming onto the market every day.
Mm-hmm.
He even says explicitly in the film that 85% of the new chemicals that are brought out every single year, 85% of them have zero information about health and safety impact.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that speaks volumes about where we are in this draconian system. I mean, the system doesn't work for consumers, it doesn't work for companies, it doesn't work for businesses, it doesn't work for anyone. And whenever the system is built this way, that means we all lose somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, whenever I talk to somebody like Richard Clapp, who knows just about more about cancer than anybody else out there,
mm-hmm.
you know, he was really clear that, you know, our genes are not capable of changing so quickly and so rapidly that the doctors out there, a lot of doctors, they ask you your family history, and they ask you what, you know, do you have a family history of cancer? Do you have a family history of diabetes, Parkinson's? What do you have in your genealogy? But what everyone is starting to understand more now is that genes aren't capable of changing that quickly, and so there are environmental problems that our grandfathers have been facing or our grandmothers have been facing. There are problems still to this day because we're still living in very similar environments. We're not really that different from where we're at in proximity. So the other issue with all of this is the term ubiquitous that keeps coming up with the people that work inside of the law sector and also the science sector. The term ubiquitous means the court system. I mean, we live in a litigious age, and the court system sits back and says, well, you know, if you're exposed to a particular chemical, then even if there's not safety regulations, then you can sue. But the big problem with that is that the court system and the companies and everyone else that's involved in this issue understands that we're exposed to so many different chemicals every single day that it's impossible for us to know what to sue for. And who are you going to sue? It could have been enough. So they understand that this is a big problem, but doing nothing about it is something that they're very good at. So
mm-hmm.
to me, you know, whenever the court system says, you know, you're exposed to so many chemicals every single day, what was it? Was it Teflon? Was it pesticides? What caused your tumor? Was it BPA? I mean, what was it? And it's so difficult at low-dose exposures over the course of this latency period and timeline that it's drug out over a decade or two decades, and it's impossible for us to track where this came from in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the scientists have been really clear about this. They all understand that this is the situation that we're in, and that's something that they've tried to drive home with me, and they did very well in the film.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, the scientific system studies them one at a time. The legal system, you can only sue one thing at a time.
Right.
So it's kind of like unless we go to the regulatory level and control all of them, you know, we really can't accomplish much in this regard, in fact. We're about to go into a break for station identification here in Connect the Dots, and we do that, you know, at the half-hour point approximately. And we'll come back, and please stay with us, listeners, for the second half of Connect the Dots. We're talking with filmmaker Ed Brown, the auteur of Unacceptable Levels, a film
we're
discussing today about toxic chemicals, and we'll be back in the second half of the show to discuss more about it and also hook listeners up so they can see the film. So stay with us for the second half of Connect the Dots. Welcome back, listeners, to the second half of Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern on the Progressive Radio Network, connecting the dots between your personal health and your total health environment. Today's show, I'm talking with Ed Brown. He's the director of the film Unacceptable Levels, about toxic chemicals and how they are kind of everywhere and what they're doing to us and what we can do about it. If you missed the first half of the show, please go into the Connect the Dot archives. You can listen to the whole program. You can like us on iTunes. You can pass the show along to your friends. Post it on your Facebook page as an MP3. Link to it so more people can become more aware. As Ed was telling me in the first half of the show, even though he has gone on an extraordinary journey over the last 4 years making this film, he began kind of, you know, as many of us do, sort of just assuming that everything that's out there that we're exposed to was either vetted or regulated or somehow it wouldn't harm us, and of course that's not what he found. If you want to see the film Unacceptable Levels, find out more about it, I urge you strongly to go to the website. www.unacceptablelevels.com. There you'll find information about screenings in your area. I just missed one in New York, sad to learn. But the film is traveling everywhere, and Ed Brown is going with it. How else will people be able to see the film, Ed?
Well, hopefully it's going to be in a lot of theaters very, very soon. There's an organization, a company called TUG, that we're working with, that makes it available for community screenings to happen, so individuals can start a screening. Now, this is a process that's going to start up in the next 2 to 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And what individuals can do is say, I want to bring this film to my area, my community. I think people really need to see it. This is a very urgent issue, and we need to get people mobilized to do that. So they can go to Unacceptable Levels. As we're going to be working with TUG, which is TUGG.com. They've done this for a lot of other really great films over the course of the past couple of years, and they're a wonderful organization that we're really proud to be working with. So that's going to be the best way that people can see it very, very soon, because the theatrical run is really important toward our tour, and that's what we're still concentrating on right now.
Mm-hmm. Have you connected by any chance with Ava Anderson, Non-Toxics, their prior guest here? We had him a few weeks back, Kim Sprague Anderson and Ava Anderson, this wonderful mother-daughter team that founded a non-toxic beauty products company. And they have house parties all around the nation with different folks coming together to learn about this exact topic and how to use healthier, safer products. And so I bet that would be a great group for you of, you know, kind of sort of early advocates and everything. There's somebody network with. I think I think that would be a natural kind of a fit. So you're really
natural. No pun intended, right?
Right.
Yeah. I know Kim Anderson very well. She's one of my favorite people. Avery Anderson as well, whose name is on the products. She's an amazing young woman. And I think that that's a company that I have a tremendous amount of not just respect for, but we use their products because they really are some of the best out there. Kim is an extremely nice person, very sweet, and she's always been working very hard to get this message out there. And we're really proud of her for doing so. You know, there's a lot of other companies out there that are doing the right thing, but Kim and Ava are certainly at the top of that list. They're fantastic. And, of course, with the way their parties and sales model works, I think that would be a natural fit, too. I'm glad you brought that up here on the air, because maybe we get that going immediately.
Yeah, that sounds super. Now, where are we in terms of the law? I know this is not, you know, it's more of an Andy Egregious or Ken Cook question, but what's going on with the law now? What's your awareness about that?
Well, you know, Frank Lautenberg, who just passed away recently, he had been for a decade or so really the biggest proponent for new chemical legislation in the United States today. He could see that there was a really big problem long before I ever did, and long before many of us will. Frank Lautenberg from the state of New Jersey really, and of course the irony is that many of the chemicals that are in the state of New Jersey are affecting the planet itself, but that are coming out of the state of New Jersey, unfortunately. But anyway, so Frank really worked tirelessly to get new chemical legislation passed. just last year, it made it out first, the first time in three attempts that Lautenberg had to get new chemical legislation through. It made it through committee last year, and they were expecting a vote sometime in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And then it didn't have bipartisan support. It only had Democratic support. And there's another senator from Louisiana named Vitter who also proposed chemical legislation. Mm-hmm. And it only had Republican support, so it still didn't have bipartisan support. So what we were expecting is something to happen this year.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea at this juncture and at this point in time during this summer, I have no idea if anything is going to happen at all.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, you know, it just keeps going round and round.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that we need an all-hands-on-deck approach to this problem. And, mm-hmm. you know, I wish, and it's my hope through this film, that we'd try to get everyone to understand, Republicans and Democrats, independents, Green Party, liberals, it doesn't matter who you are. This is affecting you, too, whether you want to pass, whether you think the legislation is necessary or not. This is affecting everybody. And when it affects mm-hmm. everybody, that means you can't run from this. And we have to somehow in this country. I mean, we have a lot of problems, and I understand that. A lot of things that people think they need to focus on immediately. But our health and well-being has to be at the top of that list.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why something has to happen in D.C. And I don't have any at this point, and I don't know if anybody has any real concrete idea about what's going to happen next.
Mm-hmm. You know, this raises a really interesting point, and, you know, I couldn't agree more, really. I couldn't agree more with what you're saying. But one of the things that comes up, I I'm on Facebook a lot and do a lot of information aggregation, have many, many friends, and, you know, it's just a great place to both receive and put out information and stuff like that. And I saw something recently where somebody was saying, it was one of these things that gets, you know, sort of passed around. Somebody was saying, oh, you know, I raised my kids back in the 70s, and, you know, we just, we smoked, we ate, you know, food with pesticides, we did this, we did that, we did this, we did that, and everybody came out fine, and, you know, we were all just fine, and we didn't have to worry about those things. Weren't those the good old days when the government, you know, didn't mess with our lives, you know? And I think what what people don't realize is, you know, we're in a more toxic world now because of the decisions made back in those days. So, yes, back in those days, it was kind of easier to get by with doing the wrong thing than it is today for the children of this coming generation. They're born into, because of what we did back then, or did not do, a more toxic world, and therefore they have less slack. But this goes, so that's like one point. But the second point is this goes to me when you say, you know, we all need to hold hands on this because it's going to affect everyone, and I couldn't agree with you more. But it goes to this idea that, you know, oh, I don't want the government, you know, telling me what to do. If, you know, if we try to regulate something like this, that's the government, you know, kind of telling me what to do, and I don't want them in my business. You know, I want to make my own choices, and what are they doing getting involved and telling, you know, so there's, in some quarters, there's a sense of government is telling me, is coming in like Big Daddy or Big Mama telling me what to do. Well, we certainly don't want them, you know, tapping our phones, taping
right.
our phone calls, or, you know, tracing everything we do. You know, there are things we don't want government doing. But is there a legitimate role for government in this, and why are people so afraid of that?
You know, I think that paranoia is easily accepted whenever it comes to an issue this big. I mean, George Orwell, who I even quoted in the film,
mm-hmm.
and Aldous Huxley, you know, over 100 years ago had created these doomsday scenarios where, you know, the government looks into every aspect of everything that we're doing, and everything
mm-hmm.
is scrutinized.
Mm-hmm.
People don't ever want it to get to that point. And we're all in agreement on that one. Sure, nobody wants it to get to that point. But we also have to sit back and say, look, ignorance is not bliss on this issue. You know, mm-hmm. the less you know about this problem is not making anything any better. I can assure everyone of that.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever you sit back and you think, I'm going to make a choice, I'm going to go out, I'm going to buy a particular product, I'm going to go to the fast food joint, or I'm going to go buy whatever you're going to buy, you are already under the assumption that somebody has checked whatever it is you're about to use or eat out, right? You've already assumed that. So you're already, most people are already comfortable with the fact that somebody already checked it. It's already the federal government. Somebody had to, and there has to be some kinds of ways and means, and there also has to be some kind of oversight. Somebody knows something about this stuff, right? Well, the laissez-faire stance doesn't really, I don't buy it on this issue, and then a lot of other issues too, in the financial sector, and also whenever it comes to the environment with fracking and Superfunds and stuff like that. I mean, these are real issues. They don't these chemicals don't magically disappear. Most people think they're like viruses or bacteria. My system can fight it, it'll flush it out, and I'll win. But most people don't understand that many of these chemicals absolutely don't work like that, and they won't work like that, and they're going to be in your body for the duration. Mm-hmm. And whenever people sit back and say, well, I don't want the government in my body, or I don't want the government dealing with this kind of thing, well, who's going to? Because if you ask them to get information to force people to tell you about what's in whatever it is you're about to use, and if you want them to do that, you have to enable them to do this. And we just don't have that right now. So, the pressure's on you. What are you going to know about whatever it is you're going to eat, drink, or breathe? What do you know about that? And are you going to make the right choice? Because maybe you have the information and maybe you don't.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're saying, I mean, what you're countering there, and I think you do it very adeptly, is this whole kind of, I don't want to know. I'd rather not know. But not knowing doesn't mean it's not happening.
Like I said, I keep going back to that, and I always will. Ignorance is not indeed bliss. You know, the less you know about this issue, the more at risk your body is. And we all have independent thought. We all have the right to ignore this kind of issue if we choose to.
Mm-hmm.
But the big problem to me is that children don't have the information. They're not going to get the information. They're not going to be provided that information by anyone unless we get somebody to do it. So, you know, we might have all the choices in the world as adults, but certainly children don't. And that's where I absolutely draw a line in the sand, and I sit back and say, this is why we all have to do something about this, because if this continues for another generation or two, dare I say it, with the rates that have been exploding as far as our health care issues up to this point, dare I say it, I can't even imagine what it will look like then if we choose to do absolutely nothing into the future.
You know, it's really interesting. Your activism and your clarity about this issue, I just have to comment, because, you know, I talk to a lot of people, and, you know, you're a younger generation father. You know, my generation, people like Dr. Clapp and others, you know, scientists, it's their role to kind of give the information but also sort of be balanced. You know, they have to be credible in this very sort of logical, dispassionate style, and that was true of many reporters. You know, we had to show both sides and do all of this. I mean, I really broke ranks at a certain point and said, well, that's too bad for that, because our health is more important. So, you know, I broke ranks on that, and now there's more of a style of doing that in the blogosphere and all the rest of it. You know, I can do that. I can both be reportorial and also be an advocate in places like where I report, like, Alternet and EcoWatch and other places like that. But the thing that's really striking me about you is that you're really speaking as a father, as a dad, as someone who's responsible to children. And we haven't had the kinds of models of father that we've had are, you know, father takes care of the store, father watches the bank, father takes care of the economic, father's protecting that there's food on the table. But the idea that father is protecting the health of the children, and that that's, you know, a dad's responsibility. You know, there are many organizations of women and moms, you know, as you were describing, you know, who are worried and concerned. And I've had, you know, Robin O'Brien and numerous people, Sandra Steingraber, you know, people who have expertise but also speak as mothers, you know. But it's actually rare that people will come out. And I've heard John Perkins say, you know, I'm speaking as a grandfather. Sure. But it's quite rare to have someone coming out and saying, I'm speaking as a father, and I really applaud that. And I think it, I think, you know, you're very effective in doing it, and it's really important for more people to follow your lead and do that, because it's a different sort of role model of father than, you know, I kind of put the, you know, the money in the bank account and, you know, the roof over our head and, you know, how I did it, what it did to the health, the future, the environment, that's not my responsibility. It's kind of, and you're actually representing a real kind of connected and accountable new model of parenting and fathering, and I just want to salute you for that. I think it's really terrific. You know,
well, I appreciate that. That really means a lot, especially after all of your efforts and tireless ones that you put forth over the years. Sandra Steingraber and Robin O'Brien, I know them quite well, and I know that their work is incredibly important. And there's no arguing the fact that with so many different moms groups out there that are really like Moms Rising and Moms Clean Air Force, for example.
Exactly.
These are great organizations that are working toward that, but you don't see Dad's Clean Air Force, and you don't see,
right,
you know, Dad's Rising. And I sit back and I say, as a father, you know, it is my job. I tell my son this all the time. I say, my job is to keep you alive, and your job is to follow my example so I can do my job. And that's what I tell my kids constantly, and I try to get them, you know, look, you know, my job as a father doesn't just stop whenever I'm able to provide. It certainly doesn't stop whenever I'm able to give my kids what they want or need or anything like that. My job goes much further than that. And that's, and you know, and I think that I'd love to inspire more fathers to play that kind of active role in looking at every, you know, we as men usually pass that responsibility off on to the mothers.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, you know, it shouldn't work like that. And again, I say this because I know I'm beating a dead horse there, but we all have this responsibility to utilize every single moment of every day. And as a father, that's, I want to keep my kids around for as long as possible. We all do. So I'm going to do absolutely everything I can in my power to ensure that they're kept safe. And all mothers do that as well, very, very well. But, you know, I'd like to inspire more fathers out there to, you know, learn more about this issue and do the right thing.
Yeah.
And they will.
Yeah, no, I think you're, you know, a vanguard of that, and I think it's really great. And it's not to say that, you know, I'm happy that, you know, I think, you know, the combined voices of, you know, mom speaking, you know, and the individual highly educated, bright moms that we've cited and others, you know, have meant a great deal doing this. But, you know, it's kind of when we marginalize our health by making it an issue of one gender, you know, even if then, you know, women have the right to defend health, it also marginalizes health. You know, it also says, I mean, when we were reading newspapers more, but it's still true, you know, on websites, you know, politics is on the front page. This is what you hear on MSNBC, politics, Democrat, Republican, the economy, and whatever.
Right.
And then the health thing, and this comes back from the days of newspapers, and it's still true online, is kind of like you know, that's women's domain, that's at the back of the book. And then the whole emphasis will often tend to be on, you know, here's what to eat in your salad, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Rather than pointing at these public policies. And that's one of the reasons we're ignorant, and it's one of the ways that health gets marginalized. And in fact, health, as we see through this topic and other topics, is complicated. There's complicated science involved. There's complicated policy issues involved. There's matters of media reportage. So, you know, health is not just, you know, oh, yay, hey, I had an organic salad, now I'm done. You know?
Yeah, right.
So, you know, so this is also, I think, your participation, the participation of other fathers, is a way that concerns over health really should be front and center as a motivating factor and priority in our social policy, rather than as a, you know, afterthought off there somewhere in the women's world for women to worry about. You know?
Yeah, I think that another aspect of that the machismo that men feel like isn't really at play here comes into being a factor. They think, like, whatever doesn't kill me can only make me stronger, right? Well, I can assure you that that's not the case. Whatever doesn't kill you now could do it in another 10 to 20 years if you don't know anything about this. And that's why whenever you sit back as a man and you sit back, you think about prostate cancer, you think about lower sperm count, and you think about kidney failure, you think about Parkinson's. You know, all of those are linked directly to chemical exposure. So whatever doesn't kill you now could very well do some real damage in the near future. So, you know, if men sit back and collectively think, I'm stronger than this, or I'm just going to ignore it, you know, whenever the day may come, whenever you're no longer capable of ignoring these types of issues like prostate cancer or testicular cancer, believe me, at that point you'll start back. Maybe you won't, but I always say to them, you'll sit back and say, maybe I should have done things a little bit differently. And that doesn't make you tough. It doesn't make you strong. It doesn't make you feel, you know, like you could take on the world by feeling like this isn't your issue as well. So that's one thing I try to get across to men, especially.
Oh, wow. You're really doing really great stuff here, I have to say. I'm so thrilled with, you know, with what you're saying there, because, you know, I think that any message, you know, we have the idea that information is just information. It's neutral. Well, it's not neutral because it's spun to us a certain way in the media. Even science is being manipulated because it's either done or it's not being done. Who's doing it? Is it independent? Is it vested? Who benefits by the outcome of a scientific study? So all that idea that something is objective, you know, or could be objective when human beings are involved, is a little naive, you know. So in the same way, you know, the way that we deliver information also is about who we are and who we're delivering it to. So, you know, with you emerging as a kind of spokesperson, really, you know, because you come from male psychology, because you're a guy, and you can speak to that, and the way, you know, guys think, I know in my health reporting for decades that I'm mainly speaking to women, and that's fine, you know, that's great, it makes sense. I know, you know, I'm a woman, I know how a woman feels and thinks, and, you know, and all the rest of it, and of course, some of those wiser, more advanced male souls come along too, you know, and sometimes they lead and do stuff that, you know, really contributes, like the Richard Claps of the world and all of that.
Sure.
But, you know, it's terrific that you're speaking specifically to male attitudes and psychology as a guy, because I think that really is going to bring in a whole new group of people that are affected and should be involved and should be self-determining in this area. So it's just terrific. So I just want to mention the film again, Unacceptable Levels. Find out more about screenings and how to get involved on the website, unacceptablelevels.com. I'm thrilled about the film. I hope it's going to be a great success. Many, many people will, you know, see it and learn more and really get up to speed on these issues and get active about it. And I really, you know, applaud you both as a filmmaker and a spokesperson on these issues, you know, as a dad, as a filmmaker, as a real grassroots called to the fray person, you know, for stepping up and doing this. And look forward to, you know, this film being widely seen and whatever, you know, you come to do next. I think it's great.
I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you so much. I mean, we have a big screening tomorrow night at 7 o'clock in Washington, D.C. at the E Street Cinema, where, you know, Andy Agreus is going to be there from Safer Chemicals, Healthy Families, and Jennifer Sass from the NRDC, along with Dr. Deborah Davis, who worked on TSCA legislation over 30 years ago. And a lot of the other screenings we're going to have great panels at. And I really thank you for your time, and I really appreciate it. And the one thing we always try to say to everybody at unacceptablelevels.com and in the film, learn, think, act. Those are the three things you really need to try to do on an everyday basis. Learn as much as you can about it. Think about the consequences and think about your actions, and then act upon those, you know, whatever decisions you've made that are going to work best for your life. And that way, together, we can make this world a better place, know more about this, and really do something with our lives and make, you know, the next generation even better than we left it.
That's really terrific. I mean, that's such an inspiring and terrific message. And, you know, anyone in the D.C. area, I would definitely avail yourselves of this opportunity that's listening to the show today, because this is a fantastic lineup of speakers. Deborah Davis, you know, is one of the original integrative medical doctors who's talked forever about, you know, the fact that cancer just didn't spring up out of the blue, you know, because the world needed chemotherapy. You know, this is something that we are kind of co-creating, and this is a major contributing factor. So I think it's fantastic that she's come down from her academic perch in Pittsburgh to participate in this. And Andy, we've had on the show multiple times. He's fantastic. And this is a way that people can also really, you know, not leave it up to others to hope that the laws come out in a way that really protects public health, but really participate themselves to make that happen through Safer Chemicals Healthy Families. You can find them online at saferchemicals.org. Sign up for their newsletter and, you know, be prepared to take action because, as you were saying, Ed Brown, you know, that law is up for revision and votes and advocacy this year. I mean, it's been ongoing since about 2009. I've reported on it regularly. Actually, my most recent alternate blog is a kind of tribute to Senator Frank Lautenberg, who introduced the recent legislation, you know, whom you were speaking about earlier. He was our Senate champion that we just lost in the last month or so. And, you know, I think we need a better bill. I think we need to pass a bill, and everyone can participate. So thank you, everyone. Thank you, Ed, for being with me today. And go out and see Unacceptable Levels, everyone. Thank you, listeners, for joining us for another edition of Connect the Dots. We'll be back next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern on Progressive Radio. I'm Allison Rose Levy. Great being with you. Have a great week.